Yes, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to talk here at this very nice location. In my talk, I'll try to build a bit on Frank Nullmeier's presentation as well, because he's introduced these notions of welfare state, of liberal and competitive statehood. And I would like to return a bit back to our debate on innovation policy and the kind of new developments in innovation policy, and raising also the question whether, if you like, we need a kind of additional element of statehood related to the role of the state in view of some of the challenges and opportunities for innovation policy that we've already been discussing this morning. So, and I would first like to remind us of some of the, if you like, forces that are going on in the background of our current debate, on the one hand relating to the changes in the nature and the practices of innovation, and on the other hand, in relation to the changing expectations and requirements that are posed with regard to innovation. So, and then I will return again to the question of the role of the state. So I'm not going to say a lot of new things yet at the beginning, so I'll be rather quick. I mean, there are different ways of how we capture the kind of ongoing developments and changes in research and innovation activities and practices. We are confronted with this accelerating and sometimes disruptive power of digitalization and virtualization of innovation activities, which is also tied to the access and the integration of a wider range of knowledge sources, more interdisciplinary and transdisciplinary research work, which at the same time opens up the innovation process to a wider variety of actors. Users have been mentioned today already, and bringing about also new types of coordination and cooperation mechanisms between those actors. And part of that story is also the embedding in this internationalization and kind of new division of labor within global value chains, where innovation is also to be conceived as a much more distributed activity. And well, Dominique referred this morning to the need to take a kind of broader view on a more evolutionary view on innovation, stressing very much the kind of linkages and co-evolution between, if you like, general purpose technologies on the one hand and the kind of user industries on the other hand. I would probably go a bit further in arguing, well, this is also a matter of social practices. Jung Howald will be very happy about me mentioning that. And the organizational embedding and the kind of organizational innovations that are often required in order to, if you like, bring some of the other social and technological elements of innovation really to the ground, including then also innovations in business models, the kind of transformative changes that these may trigger. And all that is actually embedded in a kind of institutional context that often needs to change as well. And those of you who are more familiar with this transitions literature on socio-technical change and the kind of multi-level perspective may, of course, recognize this is very much about this interplay between institutional change on the one hand and, if you like, more micro-level, or as Johann Schott would put it, niche-level kind of innovation processes. So this is the kind of development we've been seeing over the past years. And the other hand, of the developments in which innovation policy is changing are actually the new requirements and the higher expectations with regard to what innovation should actually deliver in society. We've been discussing this a bit this morning as well. It is, of course, part of the story of the shift to meet societal challenges as political motivations behind innovation, where the agendas of growth, productivity, and employment are often regarded as not being sufficient anymore as, if you like, what we want to achieve with the help of innovation in society. And the social and environmental concerns, or ultimately all the sustainable development goals, are these kind of new and more ambitious agendas with regard to what the role of innovation in society should be, what the contribution should be. I mean, we as the research and innovation communities, and if you like in the scientific and technological disciplines, maybe even more, these kind of high expectations have also been nurtured over the past years. So high promises have been made with regard to what research and innovation can deliver with regard to these expectations that have been formulated. And there is, of course, a risk that some of these promises may not be fulfilled. So this is one of the tricky things. And ultimately, this is also about, if you like, a kind of recontextualization of science and innovation in society, where, if you like, public funding to these activities is tied to a, if you like, delivery on in terms of social and economic benefits. It applies to the public sector as well as to industry in the very end. So it involves then also the stronger participation in the development of R&I agendas of precisely a wider range of those stakeholders, and also, if you like, efforts or attempts to integrate into research and innovation activities some of those requirements, or to endogenize them somehow through, for instance, mechanisms of what is sometimes called responsible research and innovation. So some of those principles are about to be integrated. So these are, in a way, some of these background changes that I've tried to capture very briefly, that give rise to some of those change processes we can observe currently. Having said that, that there is these kind of forces from the two sides of how innovation practices change and how societal expectations are changing, this does not mean that the kind of structural innovation policy that we have been used to over the past 20 to 30 years would not matter anymore. It is still the very foundation of our innovation systems, and in a way the ability to generate novelty with this innovation systems machinery is a very essential function. But on top of that, we have now what I would call the kind of two types of transformative agendas. And I think it is very important to distinguish these two, because we have heard a lot about, if you like, the more societal challenges type or environmental and social challenges type of agendas that innovation is supposed to address. But what is sometimes a bit neglected in the debates is the attention to developments that are more driven from the supply side, in a way, disruptive innovation opportunities that equally give rise to transformative change processes that we need to deal with. But the difference is, of course, that, for instance, in relation to energy or to mobility, we have existing systems in place that need to be transformed somehow. And we've been referring to this morning. But on the other hand, and Dietmar Hauff has been referring to the role of blockchain and to artificial intelligence, we are confronted with a situation where transformative change simply happens. And we are rather in a situation of somehow a loss of control as society and as the state as well, of how these developments unfold, what kind of positive or possibly also negative consequences these may entail. And my point is really to stress that we need to take into account these two facets of the transformative agendas in future innovation policy much more than we have done in the past. I mean, the political attention regarding state intervention has been shifting over the past years. And in a way, these transformative change processes that I've been referring to, they are addressing two very specific problems. Namely, they are somehow to be positioned in what I would call the kind of problem-solution space. And the difficulty that we have is that there are often diverging views, both on what the actual problem is and what the actual solution is. And a kind of transformative strategy, a kind of transformative pathway, would have to come to some degree of convergence about, or alignment about, what these kind of future strategies for handling or for addressing these transformative pathways should be. And let's say this is taken from some ongoing work with some colleagues in Utrecht as well. There is the situation that we can distinguish different types of pathways. And if you think about pathways that, for instance, are captured here on this slide, the first of the pathway, which what we call a problem-led pathway, you can think, for instance, about the ban of smoking or the zero-death policies in Sweden in car traffic. I mean, these are, if you like, approaches where we first really try to understand what the problem is and then try to conceive a variety of alternative inroads in order to address those, if you like, specific problems. So it's a kind of problem in search of a solution pathway. But we have at the same time also strategies that go the other way around, where we, if you like, look first into advancing certain solutions, but they are really still in search of a specific problem. An example of that is, for instance, observation in public space, part of the security debates where closed circuit TV has been installed. But there was a lot of uncertainty about, there was at some point a kind of convergence about, well, this might be a kind of interesting solution, but there was not yet enough about clarity about what the actual problem is or what the underlying reasons for the problem are. So the third approach, and this is, I think this is resonating with Stefan's concept about tentative governance, would be exactly this kind of more iterative approach for trying to address and for trying to realize such kind of transformative pathways collectively, which is about really trying to learn along the pathway. So that was a bit about the background, about the kind of difficulties that, in addition to the kind of established innovation policy, we are nowadays faced with, and where now the question, of course, comes: what does it mean for the role of the state? I think over the past years, we have seen what I would call the kind of normative or strategic shift in innovation policy, where it precisely these matters of directionality have been put more into the forefront, with the kind of social environmental goals and the need for such kind of transformative changes to be handled. And they require, in a way, a kind of more proactive and more anticipatory approach to addressing these strategic goals and much more attention to the downstream side of the impacts of innovation. And sometimes there's a distinction made between the kind of narrow and the broad approach, a narrow one which is, if you like, more focusing on the kind of technological remedies to these to these challenges, and the kind of broad approach that really looks into the full spectrum of social, technological, organizational, institutional innovations that would need to be mobilized in order to address these kind of issues. And this kind of, if you like, strategic or normative shift in innovation policy would, of course, have consequences for a wide variety of elements along the entire policy cycle, from the definition of the rationales, first of all, why we intervene in these processes, where, if you like, the traditional notion of failures may not be really the appropriate twist, because this is much more about trying to being more forward-looking, more anticipatory in trying to justify intervention, where the instruments regarding mixes of demand and supply-side instruments would have to come together, and where matters of policy coordination would have to be addressed at multiple levels, because the individual policies are taking place not only at different policy levels, but also in different policy realms, in particular at the intersection between research and innovation policy on the one hand and sectoral policies on the other hand. Monitoring. Do we have appropriate indicators in order to monitor and trace these kind of transformative pathways? Currently, we are still having a kind of major difficulty there. And the same holds for evaluation approaches, of course. In terms of the governance, this is also an issue that would bring about, if you like, additional requirements in terms of engagement and participation of users of, and other kinds of actors than in established innovation policy. So this creates high ambitions, and as Dietmar Harhoff said already, well, the state and the public sector is often, if you like, endowed only with limited capabilities. So there is a risk, really, in the current agendas for these transformative innovation policies, that we are overburdening the state in terms of its ability to shape and govern these transformative pathways. So this is very obvious when looking at the current debates about emissions at European level, for instance, because there are, of course, very high transformative ambitions tied to those missions. But in a way, the approaches that are currently being discussed are by far too, if you like, technocratic than what the problem-solution configuration would require. And in terms of these more disruptive examples of transformative innovation, the innovation dynamics tend to outpace the corrective capabilities of the state. We have already been discussing about some of the barriers that this entails, the organizational structures, the petrification and the control culture, to which, for instance, the kind of pillarization of policy may need to be added, and where really the question is there a different approach, a different take on these transformative innovation policy approaches possible, rather than this established, more technocratic one, and what could be elements of those? I think I can be rather quick on the next two slides, because the points that I would regard as elements of this new, more transformative role of the state have already been partly addressed this morning. So remind some of the points that Jan, for instance, mentioned in his presentation. So the issue of trying to give stability and direction in a situation of greater turbulence and complexity, where new forms of dialogue need to be established in order to generate, for instance, vision and soft orientation for priority setting on matters of this transformative role. And where, of course, a kind of iterative process of goal setting needs to be established. Funding programs would need to be designed differently, more open, flexible, and adaptive. And there are a number of examples, like the challenge-driven innovation in Sweden or a recent initiative in France as well, that is trying to implement a different model of a kind of more scaling-based model of funding initiatives that would adopt these more flexible principles and be geared more to, if you like, this kind of transformative logic. The experimental approach has been mentioned a couple of times, and I'm not going to repeat this right now. What may still be interesting is this point that generalization and scaling of the innovation of the innovations is an issue where we are facing a lot of difficulties. Again, I can refer to Jürgen Howald, who will talk about social innovation, where this is a very, very peculiar and very pressing issue, where they are very difficult to scale because of the lack of economies of scale that you have in other types of innovations. And I think it is an interesting experiment at the moment with the European Innovation Council as an effort to, to pilot an activity, a kind of policy instrument that would contribute to facilitate the scaling, the scaling of innovations much faster than it has been done in the past. Whether it will work, and there are a lot of criticisms, we will still need to see. The tentative adjustment of, if you like, institutional context is another element that we need to see. And I think one element that we have not really discussed is the role that infrastructure plays. I mean, it's obvious in the context of the Energiewende in terms of the physical infrastructures, but for instance, in terms of with regards to artificial intelligence, which draws on the one hand on the availability of data and the availability of the appropriate algorithms, there is an issue about do we have the necessary knowledge infrastructures essentially to draw on. Concluding observations that brings me back a bit to the notion of statehood. So what I've tried to outline here is probably not a kind of liberal statehood model. It's not a Bismarckian either. Probably the notion of competitive wouldn't fit either. It is a mixture of a kind of proactive but at the same time very much collaborative model of statehood that would fit into to the requirements for realizing these transformative pathways that I've been referring to. So, in that sense, the state would assume additional roles and have a more proactive role, and I think this more proactive role is quite well justified due to the wicked nature and the coordination requirements that are associated with these transformative pathways. It requires a more differentiated and flexible policy approach and more anticipatory. And at the same time, I would say that this fallacy of technocratic planning would need to be avoided. And we are currently running the risk that, for instance, in this mission-oriented R&I policy, a kind of too technocratic approach may try to be adopted, which would be suitable for the kind of old type of missions, but not to the new ones we are currently discussing. I think there are experiments going on with this approach, and so one element is certainly also this question of how thematic and sectoral policies might absorb elements of innovation policy. Currently, innovation policy is a very well-established field of policy. It has emerged over the past 20 and 25 years, but we may actually ask ourselves the question whether in view of these more two types of transformative agendas, we need to shift back some parts of that into the sectoral policies rather than trying to, if you like, build extensive coordination mechanisms between policy areas that will be very difficult to organize. And I will stop here. Thank you.